this was significant because he found that frogs were experiencing these hormonal changes at very low levels of atrazine, 0.1 parts per billion, which is much less than the EPA limit, which is 3 parts per billion.
Well, Danielle Ivory, I want to thank you for your investigation. Staff reporter at the Huffington Post Investigative Fund. We will link to your report at democracynow.org. Happy birthday to Vesta Gadarz. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkshire, Ruf Abdelkaddous, Aaron Mate. I'm Amy Goodman with Ruf Abdelkaddous. Thanks for joining us.
And it's 6 o'clock in the evening on a Tuesday night. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. And guess what? It's time for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, live back in the studio, back in Stony Brook, New York, Long Island. Actually, I guess it goes the other way around. Stony Brook, Long Island, New York, USA. Yeah, I was away from the USA. I was gone. I was overseas, having a time of my life. Well, one of the times of my life, anyway. You might have heard some of it. We tried to bring some of it to you. The first week, actually, was a broadcast of something that happened back in July, the Tor Camp hacker camp, which took place in Washington State on the site of a missile silo. And part of that program was a tour of the missile silo, which I thought was pretty incredible and scary. While I was away in Europe, we played that show. Then the second week, we heard some fun from Dublin. Actually, the fun was trespassing. Yes, there's no easy way to say that. But we were walking on train tracks we weren't supposed to be walking on, and well, there weren't trains on them except for that one that went by that we weren't expecting. But it was fascinating because we saw train tracks that connected the Republic to the North. Theoretically, a train line that actually went from the rest of the country and connected to the line that went up to Northern Ireland. So that's something that doesn't have regular rail service, and it was kind of fun to sort of spend a few hours walking down these very seldom used train tracks with some people from Ireland and some people from the States, having some interesting conversations and experiences that will take lots of therapy to erase. And then last week we had a very interesting show involving my escapades on the western coast of Ireland, where I met up with Marianne Devine, who is still part of this radio station, just not at the moment because she's living in Ireland. But we actually teamed up and tracked down a relative of mine that I had never met before, that I had connections to. And all that was, that wasn't broadcast. That was a little too personal to broadcast that. But we broadcast the fun of driving around on the wrong side of the road on very narrow streets and very majestic scenery as we stood on the cliffs of Moher and did all kinds of other things. So that was what we did over the last several weeks on air. I've done many things since then, including wandering over to Holland and being a part of the Hacking at Random hacker camp. And boy, you know, I know I talked this thing up and tried to get as many people to go as possible. And, you know, it's really great to meet people over there who say, hey, you know what, I heard you say that it was a good idea to go over here, so that's why I came over. And boy, are you going to get it now? No, most people are very happy that they went, actually. Most people are very... It is difficult. I know it's difficult. It's not easy to just... uproot yourself from your job or your schooling, or if you're in detention of some sort, just to break away for a little bit of time. But, you know, it's so worth it in the end. Even if you do go into debt a little bit, when you think of some of the things that people go into debt for that don't have that kind of payoff, you know? And this is something that really was worth it. Learned so much, met so many cool people, and just had a great time hanging out in this camp field for about 5 days in the middle of the Netherlands. And so a lot of people from New York over there, a lot of people from the States, of course a lot more people from Europe and other parts of the world, mostly Europe though. And it's just, it's so cool just to be a part of that and to interact, share stories, and just have a great time. So don't feel bad if you missed it, because we're going to bring you audio from that, and true, it won't be exactly the same, but it'll be more than the vast majority of people in this world will ever experience. Now, if you really, really want to head to something European and hacker-related, I suggest planning ahead now for the Chaos Communications Congress. That's the German annual hacker get-together, which takes place in the winter in the amazing city of Berlin. It's very different from a hacker camp in the middle of Holland, but it's really cool. It's really cool. It's a great city to hang out in. The only thing is, of course, you have to go there between Christmas and New Year's. That might be good for some people, those of you in school perhaps, because generally you're not in school during that period. Those of you with a job that you can get a week off. But those of you with vindictive families that might expect you to be around for the holidays, you might have a problem. But regardless, this is the time to look into it, to get cheap airfares, to book places to stay, things like that. And that way you won't feel bad when the time comes and we're talking about how great it is. Yeah, it's amazing. CCC.de is the website for the Chaos Communications Congress, or Chaos Communications Club. And you'll hear all kinds of fun things going on over there. The next hacker camp will take place in 2011. That sounds so far away, doesn't it? But it's 2009 now, and I can't get my head around that. So that's only two years away. So, yeah, the next hacker camp takes place in Germany in 4 years. Next one will be in Holland. Next year, though. Oh, next year. Right here in New York. The Next Hope. Yeah, we officially announced it at the hacker camp. Well, officially announced it to them, anyway. We haven't really officially announced it to the world. I guess maybe that's what I'm doing now. But July 16, 17, and 18, 2010, at the Hotel Pennsylvania in New York City. That will be the Next Hope, hackers on planet Earth. And you know that's going to be a lot of fun, because it always is. It always is. We've done, seven of them now? Yeah, so it's starting to become a regular habit almost. So, yeah, we hope to see you there. Hope to have a lot of people from around the world visit us. And more information on that will be posted at hope.net, the website that all kinds of religious groups keep trying to buy from us, but we refuse. For anything under $1 million, that is. Okay, let's read some listener mail. And we have some audio that we want to play from various things that happened overseas. Not all of it made it onto the air in the last couple of weeks, and there's still more to come in future weeks. But tonight is a live show. Tonight we want to take phone calls a little bit later on. Write down the number, 631-632-9872, country code 1. Our email address, which, you know, doesn't get nearly enough email, I have to point out. I mean, yeah, we get plenty of spam, but, you know, you can only read that so many times before it starts to get boring. And it's so much better to hear from real people. And I've come to the conclusion that I'm not going to get millions of dollars sent to me by these people whose mother-in-law was deposed from some country someplace, and for some reason I'm the person that can save them simply by giving them my bank account information. I've realized that doesn't work. They just stop talking after a while. And those people from Nigeria who talk in all caps, well, they're just not that dependable. And sometimes I'm convinced that some of the mail we get isn't from a person at all, but rather some sort of automated device or being. I can't quite explain it, but it's just, I get the feeling there's no humanity behind it. So please, if you're a human being and you're listening, write to us. Make us feel better, knowing there's a human out there. otw@2600.com is our email address. Here's somebody who wrote into us. And now we're about to display their words on the air. Yeah, there's that danger. That could happen. Dear Emmanuel, Limerick Junction, which you featured in your last episode. Was that the last? Yeah, that was last week's episode that we were in Limerick Junction on the crazy train going to Limerick. Limerick Junction is a bit of a godforsaken spot, but I'm glad you got out to the West Coast. It's a wild and beautiful place. If your heart is up to driving our insane roads again, you should rent a car and go from Cork to Donegal. It would be well worth the many moments of abject terror. Now, I gotta tell you, you know, it's driving on the wrong side of the road, that's the easy part. It really is. It's not hard. I can do that. I can shift with my left hand rather than my right hand. That's easy. And I know a lot of people can't drive stick. It's the best thing you can do is learn how to drive stick, because you'll be prepared for all sorts of things. You'll have more control over your car. You'll get better gas mileage, and you'll be a better driver. It's not hard to learn. It takes a little bit of patience, but wouldn't you rather have a skill that can come in really handy? It's strange. We go over there, and they rent you a car, and all they want to see is your driver's license, and it's almost an afterthought. Oh, you know, by the way, drive on the left. We prefer that. And here's a stick shift. Maybe you don't know how to use it. Maybe you do. Not our concern. But yeah, you know, fortunately I know how to use it, but a lot of people don't. And it's, take the opportunity to learn. The things that scare me over there are simply the preciseness that you must get when you're driving down a very narrow road. I mean, all these people are coming at you really fast. 120 kilometers an hour. That's something like 65, 70 miles an hour. And there is literally less than an inch separating you from the car that's oncoming. There is no shoulder. Many times there are sheer boulders, just to emphasize the fact that you are not to stray past a particular line. And I don't think it would be any easier if I was driving on the right-hand side. I think I'd still be scared to death. Anyway, continuing with this letter, I'm sorry for the sidetrack there. Regarding why the roads are so small and windy, they are literally ancient. Many of these roads would date from a period where they were simply tracks and dirt for foot-slash-horse-slash-cattle traffic, linking tiny communities in existence thousands of years ago. The local councils charged with maintaining and upgrading these routes are notoriously incompetent and corrupt, and for some strange reason, road upgrades on rural routes seem to happen at election time. Remember that you are on a road to a noted tourist attraction. Imagine what it's like off the beaten track. Parts of the West Coast were extremely isolated up until quite recently. Electrification did not reach all parts of the mainland until 1973, mainland being Ireland, that is. And the last inhabited offshore island was only hooked up in 2003. They didn't have electricity until 2003. It's incredible. My father, who is not yet 60, comes from a part of the country which is only about 40 miles from Dublin. But he can remember when electricity came. It changed everything. As an aside, you passed within a 10-minute walk of me, as I'm near one of the stations you'd go through on the journey to Limerick. It's a very small world. Yeah, I've heard from a number of people who I pass by unwittingly. And, I'm sorry we missed you, but I'm sure I'll be over there again, and I'm sure you'll be over here for the next Hope or for something similar. So look forward to seeing you then. Hope you enjoyed the trip. Horace sounded fantastic. I would have loved to get there, but I'm one of the legion of unemployed in this country at the moment, so it just wasn't possible. Best wishes. Keep up the great work. Signed, Dave. Dave, thank you very much. Sorry you weren't able to make it to Horace, but you know what? There's one way you can make it to a hacker conference. That's to have your own. That's to start one locally and invite as many people as you can. And then before you know it, all these people will be in Ireland visiting you. And then Nicolau writes, "Hi, I love the Ireland shows and all the other field ones you've been making. It really has been a stressful week with the silo visit and all." I agree. But it's over for now. But let's go back to Ireland for a moment. We have, look at that. How do you like that? How do you like, you know, this studio, I swear to God, is a time bomb. You put the CD in, you make sure, okay, this CD player will accept your CD, the times show up and everything, everything is fine, you're ready to go, and then it just rejects it after it's accepted it. That's incredible. That's unbelievable. All right, I'm going to reject it again. You know what? I'll use the friendly one up on top because that one worked. I don't trust this one on the bottom anymore. Okay, except this one isn't ejecting the one that's in there. Hold on, I got to hit stop and then fine. Forgotten what third world radio stations are like. Traveling throughout the world where, despite the ancient roads, things are updated. Okay, let's see. Is this going to work? All right, you're saying you're going to work. I'm trusting you, CD player. You better not let me down. Okay, we're going to go back to Ireland. And this is actually audio didn't make it into the Dublin show. Voltaire, who I was traveling with in Ireland, and myself raced across town to make it back to a television set by 6 p.m. because of something that we heard would happen every night at 6 p.m. And we didn't want to miss it. Well, I didn't want to miss it anyway. So let's hear what happened. So we're here in Dublin. Voltaire, say hello.
Hello.
We just raced all the way across town by foot because of something we saw in the guidebook that said every day at 6 p.m. On RFE1, which is the government channel, they're so out of touch with modern times that they still have a call to prayer every night at 6, and they ring the bell 18 times. So it's like 3 minutes to 6 now. And we're watching TV. And I expect this to be wrong. Because a lot... I see. That's how it's going to be, huh? You're just going to cut it off midstream? This is unbelievable. Okay, you know what? I don't like you anymore, CD player that I never used before. We're going back down to the other one. This is incredible what I have to go through here. While I'm putting it into the other CD player, let me just take this opportunity to apologize for the GSM sounds that you're going to hear throughout this recording, because that does happen occasionally, especially if you're stupid enough to have a cell phone on near you. You hear that little buzzing noise. And error 02 I'm getting now on this CD player. I'm so sorry, folks. Boy, if we could just go back to the days of vinyl when things actually worked. It's not like I didn't test this out first. Not like I didn't have it all set up. It's the machine decided to attack me after. You're not going to work either, are you? Unbelievable. All right, so we're going to go back up to the other one. You know, there's a third CD player here, but that one says it's broken. Can you? These are the two that are working. All right, we're going to try this again. We're going to try this again. I apologize. There's really nothing I can do, though. I mean, other than recording it onto reel-to-reel, that wouldn't work either because the reel-to-reel machines don't work. Reenacting it, maybe that's the only thing we can do. All right, let's try this again, please. So we're here in Dublin. Voltaire, say hello.
Hello.
We just raced all the way across town by foot because of something we saw in the guidebook that said every day at 6 p.m. On RFE1, which is the government channel, they're so out of touch with modern times that they still have a call to prayer every night at 6, and they ring the bell 18 times. So it's like 3 minutes to 6 now. And we're watching TV. And I expect this to be wrong, because a lot of things we've seen so far have been wrong. Can you name something that's been wrong?
Well, the guidebook said that brunch ended at 4:30, when in fact it ended at 4. But luckily we got there before either time. So.
The guidebook also said that the bus from the airport was €7, and it actually turned out to be €8. And that caused a bit of confusion. In fact, a total stranger gave me €1, which was rather nice.
That was nice.
We kept trying to pay him back, and he wouldn't take our money.
Yeah. You normally don't see people in, like, cowboy hats being that nice, but...
That's true. Was he in a cowboy hat?
Yes, he was.
Why was he in a cowboy hat in Dublin? That's weird. Okay, you might hear some advertising in the background. That's not something we intend to air, but it's just something that is on right now. I notice, as I'm watching this scantily clad woman trying to sell us something, Kellogg's Special K. Yeah, you won't want to wear anything else. I realize now that the government broadcaster, unlike BBC, has commercials. So basically the way it's set up here is you have RFE1, RFE2, pretty much like BBC 1 and 2, and then you have a third channel, independent of some sort, and a fourth channel, which is mostly Gaelic. Okay, now there's an ad for Radio 1. I think we have about 2 minutes left. Let me check my phone for the exact time. Yeah, we have about maybe a minute and a half. And this may very well not happen. I'll say this, though, we're getting better at moving our way around the city. We got hopelessly lost a day or so ago.
Indeed. That was not fun.
It was a little bit of fun, but yeah, we had been up for 2 days, so it wasn't much fun wandering around the city and finding out that the names of the streets had changed literally in 5 minutes, and we were wandering all over the place. Okay, now there's some advertising for American films on RTE1. This is going to be so out of place if they do ring church bells in a minute after having an ad for Ashton Kutcher, Brittany Murphy movie. There it is. It's only three bells. Oh, sorry. Volta, you keep count. This is six. Oh, it's in increments of three. That's weird. Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, you think? Maybe. Wait, what are we up to now? Did you lose track?
Nine,
all right. And there are pictures of praying people and churches and babies and... Oh, wait, that was four. Was that... I've lost track now.
She better not be in life,
though. There's a woman making eggs for some reason and leaves. And there's an old person looking at a cross. You can only see the feet of Christ there. Wow, she's scary looking. As the sun sets...
Radio Television, and now on RTE1, we go over to Anthony Murnane in the newsroom. Hello there, you're welcome. The headlines tonight.
The EBS... Why did you say you're welcome when we didn't say thank you? Okay, that was bizarre, don't you think?
Yes.
It's almost worth racing across the city for it, but wow, very unusual. Okay, we've seen the call to prayers here in Dublin.
Yes, you've been called.
You're welcome. Yeah, oh, thank you. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Jesus, for making the CD player not stop in the middle of that. I was really praying. But yeah, that was it. That was a bit of fun there. Apparently, every day at 6 p.m. Irish time on their primary station. They ring the bell 18 times. Pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff there. Now, here's something else that, as long as the CD player is working, might as well keep going. The City of London, where I went to afterwards, after Ireland, we went over to Wales and then made our way down to London and spent some time there, hung out with some people, went to the 2600 meeting in London. But there's some very interesting things happening in that city as far as surveillance. We've talked about this before. There are cameras everywhere. Everybody is constantly under surveillance. And there's this perpetual state of paranoia that I think is kind of a prelude to what we might see over here. Although, to be honest, I think the British have something just in their genes that make this kind of thing inevitable. And the reason I say that is because if you look at history, you look at old TV programs like The Prisoner, for instance, you look at television programs the Teletubbies even, you have these loudspeakers coming up out of the ground commanding you to do things. I don't know what the British have about this. They have these school teacher type voices with very stern warnings telling you not to do certain things and telling you you have to do this particular thing. And just this overall feeling that there's danger about and that you have to keep an eye on the people around you and that you must be put in your place and that there's a place for you to be put into. And all these things that just totally change the outlook that you have on the rest of the world, on your particular life. And you feel the effects. You feel the effects pretty quickly. As a visitor, somebody just spent a few days there. It's an incredible contrast to a place like Amsterdam or even a place like Ireland or just pretty much anywhere else. So what we're going to play now, believe it or not, is a ride on an elevator. Yes, this is an elevator in the underground. It's on one of the outlying stations where you have to actually take an elevator to go down because it's so deep. And just take a listen to the tone of the woman as she's telling you not to block the door. Yeah, I mean, it's just something you would not see in this country. The announcement would be a lot more pleasant, cheerful, would not be so patronizing. Like you're some school child that must be put in place, must have your knuckles wrapped with a ruler or something. I listened to this woman, and it's just, I wanted to block the door more than anything after she kept telling me not to. And people riding in the elevator, they just listen. They're just standing there quietly being talked to in that manner. And if you get used to it, if that keeps happening, day in and day out, you have loudspeakers talking to you, commanding you to do certain things, you just develop a mindset where that's normal. And if there is no loudspeaker, you don't know what to do. All right, take a listen. This is an elevator ride. Lasts about a minute. Let's hope that the CD player makes it through this one. And we'll be back right after this. And don't be scared, because we're right here.
The lift on the right will be the next lift. Keep clear of the doors, please. Please do not obstruct the doors. Ticket hall level. Please have your tickets ready. Please do not obstruct the doors. Keep clear of the doors, please. Please do not obstruct the doors.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to scheduled engineering work, the Northern Line is not stopping at King's Cross St. Pancras.
Okay, you know, that's another thing that they have an awful lot of. They have all kinds of other recordings going on, announcements constantly. It never stops. They're always telling you something about a broken escalator on some station someplace, and because of that broken escalator, you must make a choice whether you want to take the stairs, which have 101 steps, and they actually do count the steps, or take another line to a different stop and then double back and get off someplace else. And they just basically are constantly hitting you with all this information over and over and over again. And it really gets kind of complex after a while. So you have that in addition to being scolded by the nasty woman on the elevator telling you, please do not obstruct the door. I mean, just the tone, the way it's drawn out, you know, you could say that so much nicer. Ladies and gentlemen, please don't obstruct the door. I mean, you know, I wouldn't obstruct the door if you told me nicely. But boy, do I ever want to go back and obstruct that door, or any door. Just when I hear that, I just want to obstruct something. All right, here's another elevator. Yes, I recorded two elevators. Because they were different. They were different elevators, and they had different recordings. And in this particular one, there's just a point where it's not as nasty, not quite as nasty or patronizing, but in the middle of the elevator ride, I was struck by this. And yes, I do walk around recording things. Sometimes people think that's strange, but I get some interesting things. In the middle of the elevator ride, just going down, everyone sort of silently, in that Winston Smith-type way, just going down, staring straight ahead, not talking. All of a sudden, you're admonished about smoking in the underground. Underground, of course, being the subway. And it wasn't something like, please don't smoke in the subway. No, nothing like that. Listen to the way she tells you. And imagine you're on the elevator just riding down with a bunch of other people who are just trying to be good citizens.
Next lift, number one.
Okay, we're on the elevator now.
No smoking anywhere on the underground.
Yes, ma'am.
Ladies and gentlemen, this weekend there are 4 planned track closures and 7 planned full or partial station closures as part of the DFL investment program. There are posters of the station. Please ask a member of staff for assistance.
Northern Line services are operating normally.
You're going to hear a subway door close. It's like a guillotine. Yeah, and that's pretty scary because it looks like it's going to chop your head off and stops at the last possible moment, and it makes that horrible noise. And here's the underground pulling away. Okay. Well, I just thought that was an interesting way to end it with the underground pulling away like that. But yeah, it's just, it's incredible the amount of information that's being thrown at you, but just the tone of it all. No smoking anywhere in the underground. It's not a request. I mean, you shouldn't have to request that people not smoke. It should be common sense, obviously. But the way it's said just makes you feel like you've done something wrong when you haven't done anything wrong. It makes you feel like a misbehaving child. All right. Well, okay, speaking of misbehaving children, I took a train after Har. Just imagine that Har has happened, Hacking at Random conference took place, and I came back. I came back through the UK and made my way up to Scotland because I had planned on going to Scotland before. And, I didn't expect all this Lockerbie business to happen. I planned this months in advance, but of course it had to happen the very day I got there. But that's something I'll get into in a moment. While I was taking the train up from London to Glasgow, But wouldn't you know it, this happens to me almost everywhere I go, every train I take. I always manage to find myself next to the most obnoxious person or the loudest screaming baby there is. In this particular case, I was lucky enough to find myself right behind some guy who is deciding to do all of his business on the train, nonstop. I don't know if this guy never comes to the office or just does all his business from a train or if he just never stops doing business. All I know is I was a captive audience to this. And it's not like he was talking quietly. He was talking loudly, really loudly, getting animated discussions. Like he was having an argument with somebody that was sitting right next to him. Except he was on the phone. And people just accept this. This is normal now. This is what people do. So I figured, you know, I tolerated this for a few hours. And yeah, it was a few hours. And I'm mad at myself for not realizing what I could do until fairly late on in the trip. So I was listening to music, I was listening to old radio shows and things like that. And then I realized the very device I was using to do that with also has a microphone. Now what you hear at this particular point
So you've got the
is an announcement on the train. Yes, yet another announcement. Very complicated, but also very personalized. The guy's telling you what he'd do if he was you, because the train was a few minutes late. Throughout this, you can hear this guy speaking over the announcement.
Yes, that's on the list. That's on your list. That's on your list for this week. Yeah. Okay. Let me get your update on the Picton factory. We've got there. All right. Cheers.
Customers travelling to Edinburgh Waverley. The connection now from Preston is at 5 o'clock, 1700. However, it will be a very busy service. It's a tea time service between Bolton and Oxenholme. If I was you, I'd remain on this service, changing at Carlisle. The service follows us.
Jill,
so it is the 5 o'clock departure from Preston, 1700 hours. Is the 1811 departure from Carlisle.
Past is wrong the
if you travel to Edinburgh Waverley, remain on this service, changing
on the list of things
Carlisle.
Where I should be checking.
Our service arrives in Edinburgh Waverley at 1813. If you're changing at Preston, the Edinburgh is 1700. We remain on to Carlisle at 1811. It is the same train.
Could you do me a favour, though?
It arrives into Edinburgh Waverley final station.
Could you ask your drivers to drop with those three products, just an email to Pat, with those three products on, to tell me whether the testing is uploaded on CMS or not. All right, sorry. Yeah, could you, for those three products, and just drop Pat an email? It's the testing Pat's referring to, but I'm just concerned that obviously we thought it had got lost and it was last week when it all kicked off as well. Can we just check that everything's on for those three products? All right, thanks very much, Jill.
This guy spent hours and hours and hours talking about some kind of product release of all kinds of pamphlets and things, one call after another. Just never ended with his little tiny minuscule world that nobody else cared about that I was a captive audience to. I just wish, you know, I could have gotten more information about it. Passwords or phone numbers or anything like that. You know, it's just basically if someone's going to blurt out their phone number to you while you're sitting next to them on the train, you have an obligation to call that number relentlessly while the train is moving. Of course, block your number at the same time so they don't get your number. But in this particular case, I thought just having his voice broadcast throughout the world might be one thing that I could do. I think if everyone went around recording people as they were talking loudly on cell phones and then broadcasting that information or spreading it around the internet, maybe people would be a little quieter or wouldn't use the phone constantly.
We get that test report redone, or did we get it fiddled?
In a way, I feel sorry for the guy because this is everything to him. These product releases and these board meetings, and it just sounds so stultifying. He could be just sitting back looking at the scenery.
I've just
seeing the cows and the sheep go by, going from town to town. But he had none of that. He simply was concerned about all this mundane nonsense.
And I just had a thought. I wondered if the instruction leaflet is, and she can't find anything. Do you know what we did on this? Did we get a new I am done, or were we just going to take this?
Anyway, let's move on with, we'll keep him on in the background for a little while.
Could you, I don't know whether you could drop it, or Joe could drop a mail to Harry, just to say.
You might have to struggle to hear me over him, though, because, well, it is hard to. To hear over some inconsiderate idiot who thinks their world is more important than anyone around them. But there was, as I said, some controversy when I was in Scotland. The alleged mastermind behind the Lockerbie bombing was released from prison on humanitarian grounds.
Yes, she has. Yeah.
And
unless he's going to tell us something difficult.
Sorry. This really is difficult. It's like I'm reliving this. Yeah. And the only reason it's called the Lockerbie bombing is because that's where the plane exploded over that particular town.
What I'd say is, even if he hasn't said that, what we need is we need some.
Boy, I'm getting angry at this
guy. To make up some rack samples at least. All right.
Take a break from this just for a few seconds so I can get the story started. Yeah. He's hanging up. Can we just take a break from the phone first? Okay, thank you. Oh, boy. Wow. It's amazing. Just imagine this for hours and hours. That's what it was. Anyway, okay, let's take a listen to this particular story about what happened. It looks like any other Scottish town. Dandelion wisps waft through the late summer air. Kids play football in the playground. Tesco has established a presence, while a few high street shops lie closed and empty. Outsiders may be surprised by how normal Lockerbie is, but to many who lived through the aftermath of the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103, normal is all they have wanted since. There's a great desire to try to get back to the way they were. That's always been very strong. They want things back to normal, says Canon Patrick Keegans, a priest who served the Lockerbie community for 5.5 years. After the atrocity of December 21st, 1988, his home in Sherwood Crescent was the only one left standing. The others were completely obliterated by the crash, a giant crater where moments before families were preparing for Christmas. But is normal a possibility? I don't think it's achievable, he says. Lockerbie is not a story that's going to go away. Even now, it's always going to be there. I was in Sherwood Crescent. I had brought my mother down for Christmas. We arrived home at 5:15 or so. We had a meal at about 7 p.m., the main news came on, and I went upstairs to find my mother's Christmas present, which she wanted to put in a safe place. Then I heard what sounded like a fighter jet hitting the roof and an explosion. The house went dark, everything went quiet, and the house shook. I couldn't move until everything stopped shaking. Eventually, the shaking stopped, and I was very surprised to find myself alive and uninjured. After rushing downstairs to find his mother had been protected behind a fridge freezer, he had headed upstairs to look out the window in the direction of the A-74, that's a highway. The whole motorway was on fire, and that's when I realized something big had happened. When I opened my front door, the whole of Sherwood Crescent was just burning. Keegans was touched by the way the community pulled together. Within a few days, people were helping clear up debris. Once the area was cleared forensically, it was a small community, and their natural tendency was to want to help. That feeling stayed in the weeks, months, and years that followed. I don't think the media attention changed people all that much. Lockerbie had press and media camped with them for 2 years. People got to know them. But as a small community, people were reluctant to speak because you get reaction like other people asking, well, why is she speaking? That kind of mentality at times. Fundamentally, the highlight from Lockerbie is the compassion that people had for each other. That's still there, but there's a reluctance of the community to rise above the parapet and speak about it. Compassion, cited as the main reason for releasing Abdelbaset Ali al-Megrahi, is a sentiment which Father Keegans understands. I'm very, very pleased that Mr. Megrahi has gone home, he said. From the very beginning, following the investigation very closely, the whole thrust of it was towards Iran. Then suddenly that shifted and it switched to Libya. We were being told at the time by the American and British authorities that if we get the Libyans, it will lead to all the others. I was suspicious about this sudden switch anyway. As we can see, time has shown that it has certainly not led to the conviction of other people. I feel an innocent man was convicted. Though Canon Keegans has moved away from Lockerbie to become administrator at St. Margaret's Cathedral in Ayr, he is still in regular contact with friends in Lockerbie and has spoken to many in recent days about the release of Megrahi. He adds, "There's mixed reactions and mixed views. The majority of people are uncertain, but a great number are of the same mind as myself. An innocent man has been convicted, and they're happy to see him released." In the town, flowers had been laid at the memorial to the 270 lives lost, but a heavy silence hangs over the cemetery. There's just one person looking at the names carved in stone. She is Jean Holland, a 57-year-old Scot, who lived most of her life in Australia and was visiting friends when she heard Megrahi had been released. She said, "I don't believe he should have been released. That's why I've come down here today. The questions haven't been answered. I think they should have kept him in jail. He's been released to see his loved ones. The families of people who died don't get to see their loved ones. Why should Megrahi get to see his?" In the visitor center at the Memorial Garden, Anne Gregg, 67, is patiently pointing visitors in the direction of the memorial. She's keen to point out the other parts of Lockerbie's story, but she accepts that the events of December 21, 1988 dominate. Anne, who at the time of the bombing lived a few miles from the main crash site, said, "When it happened, I heard the bang and saw the sky lit up. The people of Lockerbie have done their utmost to cope with the event and its aftermath. I think people have moved on, but I don't think they've forgotten. A lot of links have been established between Lockerbie Academy and Syracuse University in the U.S. It's not been forgotten. It can't be. Parents bring their children here. It's being passed on from generation to generation." Lucy Perlow of Hull says Megrahi's victims didn't have the chance to go see their families and say their last goodbyes before they were killed, so I think it's not right that he gets that opportunity. I don't think McCaskill made the right decision. Liam Ferguson of Musselburgh says, "I don't think it was the wrong decision, but I think they should have stopped the celebration happening when Megrahi arrived home, or at least stopped the cameras being there. You don't want to see that." Rachel Woolley of Glasgow, "If you've got a terminal illness, everyone should have the right to go home and die. It's not like he's going back to a brilliant life. The last 3 months of cancer aren't exactly nice." Jess McAllister of Edinburgh, "I don't think he made the right decision. I don't think it's been a very popular choice." George Cooper, South Africa, "I think it's a disgrace. It's disgusting. I think if Megrahi creates a crime like this, then he should bloody well suffer for it." Karen Hovell of Dundee, "Megrahi caused one of the greatest atrocities in Scottish history, modern history even, and he's not really paying for it. 8 years in prison for killing over 200 people. It's not really fair, is it?" L. Leopold of New York, "I think it was a stitch-up. I think the appeal should have gone through to find the truth. If they release him, they should still carry out an investigation or some kind of appeal to find out what happened." Emmanuel Goldstein of New York, "I realize, looking at the case, how little people actually know about the facts. And what's worrisome to me is that the facts aren't going to come out, whether he stayed in prison or was released back to Libya. So I'd like that to be explored further. It's never too late to find out what happened." Well, gee, how about that? I'm in this story. I had no idea. This is from the Herald Scotland, found at heraldscotland.com. And, yeah, you know, now that I think about it, I was with another radio station person. In fact, you might have heard them quoted there also. And we were just hanging out at the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh. Thousands and thousands of people all around us. And this guy comes up to us and says, "Hey, I'm from a newspaper. Can I talk to you?" I just can't get away from these people standing there minding my own business. And of all the people this guy talked to, he decided to print our comments. Pretty incredible, huh? So, yeah, I figured maybe I'd share that with... Oh, now he's back. Sorry. Okay. Okay, well, at least I'm making an announcement on the train here.
The 1603 departure from Wigan Wallgate Station, just across the road.
All right, if anyone's out there wants to give a call in, please call now, 631-632-9872. If you see the phone lines light up, we'll take the trip into Delay Land, and then we'll take some calls, hopefully. See, that'll listen to this guy make phone calls.
Yeah, I've spoken to him actually on the train today.
Yeah, you've spoken to everybody on the train today.
What's for it?
I was expecting my phone to ring.
What have you got? And I can talk about it. What have you got on the system?
Incidentally, since all of this happened, now Americans are being urged to boycott Scottish whiskey and buy Irish whiskey instead. Yeah, I'm not kidding. You know, and what you do when you go to Scotland is you sample the whiskey because that's what they're very proud of. In fact, a couple of my friends spent a lot of time sampling whiskey. They actually went away to an island where they make the stuff. But there's a website that's out now called, Boycott Scotland? .com, is that what it is? Yeah. Travel to Scotland or do business there.
Yeah, it is.
Or in the UK in general, and don't buy any British or Scottish products. BoycottScotland.com has been set up to express outrage at the decision to I have trouble reading his name, obviously. Abdel Basat Ali Mohammed Al Megrahi. Further from this point on, known as Al Megrahi only. Outrage at the decision to send him back to Libya on compassionate grounds because the 57-year-old has terminal cancer.
Yes, she's testing upload. If she comes back to me.
Tourism and whiskey account for billions of dollars of revenue for Scotland.
What about the all the other crypto factor things? Are they all done?
The country exports billions of dollars in scotch to the U.S. each year, and U.S. tourists are the biggest contributors to Scotland's tourism industry, accounting for around 14% of foreign visitors.
And the brain challenger, I presume.
BoycottScotland.com advocates opting for Irish whiskey and Irish travel instead. It's kind of suspicious, I think. Ireland has been advocated by many as the best alternative to those who regularly travel to and conduct business in Scotland.
The golf head cover.
Many have advocated avoiding Scottish whiskey and opting for American, Canadian, or Irish whiskies. British and Scottish companies reportedly appreciate the feeling behind the U.S. protests, but are rather unconcerned about the boycott's negative effects. SWA?
Do
you don't know what that is? Okay, that's the Scottish Whiskey Association. Yes. Oh, we have a train announcement. Hold on.
Good afternoon, this is Gateley Train Manager. I'd like to inform customers we're now arriving into Wigan North Western.
That's fine.
Quicker than anticipated even. Put my folks team back in. JT of us in Helling Central, Liverpool High Street, Exeter Malshire Lane. Services via Wigan Wallgate Station, just across the road from Southport Court and Manchester Victoria. Make sure you take all your personal belongings and remember the doors will not be released until we come to a complete stand and the platform. Wigan, next station, call.
Okay.
This
guy's louder than your announcements.
SWA
has been monitoring the developments, but believes the protests will be short-lived. SWA Director Campbell Evans told the British Telegraph, "We have been faced with other boycotts in the past and have found they haven't lasted. We appreciate what lies behind this action, and the heat of the moment, it is understandable." Others expect the boycott to last longer, especially if British companies benefit from increased trade with Libya.
Oh, this is the rocket that you... I think we were reworking it.
I have to say, unfortunately, we haven't gotten enough calls to justify...
He's arranged. I know that he spoke to Rich about what...
Going into the delay and...
Speak to Smithy, because I think there's not just UPCs. I think there's additional stickers.
Yeah. Let's get rid of this guy. He's starting to annoy me. He's really annoying.
Yeah, just have a word to Smithy. Okay. Cheers, Joe. See you later.
Bye. He's hanging up. Let's just fade it after this. Oh, boy. Yeah, that. Imagine hours of that. That's what you deal with sometimes on trains. If I had my cell phone jammer, that would have been so much more fun. Really would have been. Okay. So we won't have time to go into phone calls, unfortunately, because it just takes time to go there. And there was one call before, and now there's no calls. So it's just it's an investment that's not going to pay off, you know? But let me just say that our email address is otw@2600.com. Please write to us and say that you really wanted to call and didn't for some reason and give us a good excuse. And maybe we'll do this again next week and actually take some phone calls. Fortunately, we missed Hurricane Bill. Yeah, I was looking forward to a hurricane, but I was away at the time, and that's the worst possible thing that can happen, is you're away when a hurricane hits. And keep in mind also, this is the anniversary of, what is it, 4 years now, of Katrina. And Katrina had hit by now. And in case you don't know, hurricanes are named alphabetically. So that was the letter K. And we're only up to the letter B now. Yeah, so that gives you an idea of how strong that hurricane season was. But there's still a possibility. There's still all kinds of hope that a hurricane will hit in our particular area, and all kinds of mayhem and fun will result from it. Next up is Claudette. No, not on the radio station. Next up is Finn. I mean, on the hurricane list, next up is Claudette. So if there's another hurricane or tropical storm, it's going to be named Claudette. Followed by Danny, Erica, Fred, Grace, Henri, I guess is the way to pronounce it, H-E-N-R-I, Ida. You know what? I think Ida is the one I'm going to put my money on. Hurricane Ida. That's just got a ring to it. I think the one that's going to cause the most destruction, the most mayhem, is Ida. Yeah. It's going to be a while, though, because we're only up to C. So, yeah. How do you pronounce this? Joaquin? J-O-A-Q-U-I-N? I'm not really sure. There's going to be a lot of confusion when that name comes around. That begins with a J. Kate? Larry? Hurricane Larry? Really? I don't know. There's something about that just doesn't work for me. Hurricane Larry. I mean, it shouldn't be Hurricane Lawrence, at least, because that's the formal name. You don't have nicknames. It's like, you know, Hurricane Buddy or something. It just doesn't sound right, you know. You gotta give some respect to these forces of nature. Larry, it's not doing it for me. After Larry comes Mindy, then Nicholas, Odette, Hurricane Odette. Yeah, I kind of like that, but I don't think we're gonna make it to the O's. Hurricane Peter, Rose, Sam, Teresa, and well, you know what? They skip you for some reason. I don't know why they skip you. Then there's Victor. Wanda, they skip X. I can understand why they skip X, and they skip Y, and they skip Z. So, yeah, that's not right. Not right at all. All right, that's pretty much going to do it for us here tonight. I want to thank everybody for listening, and hopefully we'll get lots of email. But either way, we'll be back again next week. Have yourselves a sparkly night. Good night.
Do you?